after he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, immediately after. There are some sort of subtleties and some points there also, but ultimately it's Maharaj Pariksit. So what happened? What happened is that, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam was recited by Srila Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit. And at the end, the snake bird came and bit Maharaj Pariksit, and he passed away. However, as with many things in Krishna consciousness and with many things in life, it's not quite that simple. It's not that the snake bird just suddenly appeared out of nowhere and bit him and that was it, that was the end. No, what happened was that Maharaj Pariksit, having heard Srimad Bhagavatam, and before the snake bird came, Maharaj Pariksit was approached by his mother Uttara, who asked him, what have you been hearing? What is the essence of the message that you've just heard? Can you please explain? I think it must have been really something very special and really something really amazing. So, Maharaj Pariksit, having finished hearing the Bhagavatam, he saw his mother sitting one side crying and lamenting, because she understood that the 7 days of the curse was not just let the snake bird come and kill him, but after 7 days. So Uttara, the mother, she understood, it was clear to everyone, that now her son, Pariksit Maharaj, just now, he's going to be passing away. Just now. It's not going to be long at all. So therefore she was certainly upset, naturally. Upset as a very loving mother. So she was sitting there and lamenting, and Pariksit saw her there, crying, shedding tears of pain. Naturally, as a mother, she was very much aggrieved. So Maharaj Pariksit consoled his mother, Uttara, by saying to her, "Why are you lamenting? Now that I've received knowledge from my spiritual master, I've become completely free from all material influence and fear, lamentation, material attachment, all of these things," which normally everyone, of course, on the material platform is controlled by and limited by. So there's nothing to worry about, because death's going to come to everyone, and it's going to come to me, and it's going to come to you, and it's just going to come to everyone. So generally, of course, the people lament, and it's such a sad situation. But now I'm ready. I'm completely ready, and I feel blessed. I really feel extremely blessed so gotten this mercy from Srila Shukadeva Goswami, such a great and special soul. So Utra said, all right, you know, if it's so special, can you tell me, at least briefly, in essence, what is this nectar that you've heard from your spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami? What is this nectar? At least, what is the main part? What's the real message which is there, the heart of the subject matter? So then, Parikshit Maharaj spoke to her Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This is what happened. And Brihat means great. I think so many of us have heard the term before, Brihat Mridanga, the great Mridanga. Prabhupada said the printing press producing so many transcendental literatures, books, that's the Brihat Mridanga. A regular Mridanga is heard just in the local vicinity, but the books, they can just go all over the whole world very easily. So, and the impact they have, because there's so much logic and reason and clarity, that the essence of the message, and therefore it deeply affects people. That's the Brihat Mridanga, the big Mridanga, the printing press and the books that come from the printing press. So Brihat means great, big or great, and Bhagavatam, Bhagavat is the Srimad Bhagavatam, but this is now Bhagavat Amrita. Amrita, of course, means nectar. And it's the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the great nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what this book is, Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And because what it does, you know, obviously we'll explain as we go, but it takes the main themes, the most essential, the main themes of Srimad Bhagavatam and elaborates on them. Many, many things which are not exactly the main parts, the real essence, the most essential nectar, which everything else is leading up to. So the other things which lead up to that main essential nectar, they're not so much discussed. I mean, there's discussion, but it's more in the sense of very specifically pointing us to what is the main essence and the main nectar. In Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, the 10th canto is the main essence, certainly. But all the other cantos, it's not as clear how In the other cantos, at least so many parts of the other cantos, not all actually, but so many parts, it's much more difficult to see how all those other parts are just leading us to that one part, the nectar, the essence. It's definitely more difficult. But in Brihadbhagavatamrita, it's a lot clearer. It's just really clear. What is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam? So, so therefore, what is Brihadbhagavatamrita? It is Maharaj Parikshit giving his understandings and realizations of what is the best part of what he has heard, Srimad Bhagavatam. What is the best part? What is the real, the meaning that we've got to get out of it all? Yes, so that's interesting, isn't it? From a sort of historical point of view, that's the background of Brihadbhagavatamrita. So now it's written by Srila Sanatana Goswami, and it's very interesting. Srila Sanatana Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, the most senior, the oldest at least, most senior, although Srila Rupa Goswami is generally understood to be the leader and even the most important. But Sanatana Goswami is definitely by age the senior, and Rupa Goswami accepted him as one of his spiritual masters, like a Siksha Guru. Of course, the initiating spiritual master of Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami was Lord Chaitanya himself. Yes. But like right in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, there is what is called the Mangala Charana. Mangala means auspicious, and Charana or Charan, as we, I think, more often pronounce it, means feet. So Mangala Charana means the auspicious feet, the blessed feet of the literature. Means the beginning of the literature, which is establishing very nicely how wonderful the literature is. We will go into the Mangala Charana of Brihadbhagavatamrita just in a little while. I am assuming we'll go into it this evening. Because we're going to go on, you know, we're going to do this program every day, barring, unless there's some special things going on, and because I'm, you know, my role now in service in the GBC body and the executive committee is, you know, much more demanding now, so... but we'll do it. Some days you never know, there may be some challenges, but otherwise 7 days a week we're going to do this. So anyway, Brihadbhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami says that he says that he did not actually write it. He just held a pen on a piece of paper, and someone else was moving his hand and moving the pen, and that's how the book became produced. And who was that? Well, of course, that was his Ishtadeva, his particular worshipable deity, the particular form of Lord Krishna. Of course, Krishna is his worshipable deity, Lord Chaitanya. Who is Krishna? But amongst the different forms of Krishna, the particular form of Krishna that Srila Sanatana Goswami was focused on was Madan Mohan. Madan Mohan. Yes, he worshipped Madan Mohan, I mean the actual deity. And Madan Mohan is his, we call it Ishta Deva, specific form of the Lord upon whom he meditates and is focused and is following and serving. So yes, he said like that, that I just held the pen and then my hand started moving and it was Madan Mohan. And then you know, this is brought out even further by the fact that, you know, it's just a very interesting, intriguing point, that Srila Sanatana Goswami, not only did he write Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but he wrote purports. He wrote a commentary on, you could say, you might say, his own book. But he didn't really see it like that. He saw it as being the book of Sri Madan Mohan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his Ishta Deva. He saw it as being his book, and therefore it didn't to him seem contradictory to write a commentary on his own book. You follow the idea? Just like Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada translated and wrote purports on so many books, as we all know very well, like the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam itself, Chaitanya Charitamrita. He did Nectar of Devotion as a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yeah. So, and for Prabhupada, for example, with Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna. So Prabhupada translated, and for the sake of clarity, he wrote purports. And no one will think that there's something unusual about Srila Prabhupada writing purports to the book which has actually been produced by someone else. It's just, you know, it's just quite normal that people may, I mean, you know, qualified people may do commentaries on different important literatures. So in that sense, if we take it that this is Madan Mohan's book, and Sanatana Goswami is basically more or less being just like a scribe, you could say, just someone who's just recording things which are coming from other people, then for him to do purports is natural. There's nothing unusual about it at all. Completely natural. And indeed, I'm sure we would, at least if we understand the importance of Prabhupada's purports, you know, in the sense that he said that the verses, they're not so important, but what is important are the purport, his purports. Because without the purports, how are you going to understand the verses? You know, as well as much as they need to be understood. our understanding, because generally we're not qualified in such extremely, supremely deep subject matters. If it's just up to us to figure out and understand what is the meaning of this verse and that verse and these great literatures, then obviously there's so much room for us to misunderstand, make mistakes, not understand completely or clearly, and so on like that. So in that sense, Srila Sanatana Goswami, for him to write purports on what you could say is his own book, you know, in that sense, it's not something strange. And I can also mention that the six sandarbhas of Srila Jiva Goswami, they're vast, they're even much bigger. If you put them all together, they're much bigger even than Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is not a small book. But Jiva Goswami wrote a commentary on his six sandarbhas. He wrote commentaries on each one. Same type of idea. So, yeah. He said, Sanatana Goswami felt there was a need for further explanation and clarification, because in the course of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we'll see, you know, assuming we reach the end, we'll see that a very major part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is pointing out how some very great devotees are not the greatest devotees, that there are other devotees who are greater, and even other devotees who are much greater. So he says, let me just read what he says. He says, how could I dare to enter into Krishna's inner chamber of his palace and judge who is a greater devotee than another? And in order to judge who is a greater devotee, you need to find defects and faults in the devotional service of Krishna's eternal associates, like Rukmini, Satyabhama, and Uddhava. I mean, who could do that? Who can do that? Point out defects in Rukmini, Satyabhama, Uddhava, and others. You know, this is just, we can't do that. And Sanatana Goswami, having written in such ways to point out these things, to bring out the greatness of other devotees, ultimately the gopis of Vrindavan, he was feeling, taking it in the sense that it's his book, in that sense, he felt the need to give further elaboration when he had finished, to avoid, you know, the appearance of being critical and criticizing like that, which, you know, we cannot do. Particularly with devotees like that, we cannot do with so many devotees, at least from our position. Okay. So, yes, so therefore the purpose of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is to give the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think that's sort of we've made that point sufficiently. So the Vedas are compared to a kalpa vriksha, a wish-fulfilling tree. And the ripened fruit of that wish-fulfilling tree is Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, that ripened fruit has been blended with the nectar from the mouth of Shukadev Goswami. So it's just super nectar. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, the idea is that Shukadev Goswami has further digested and blended the nectar which is naturally there in the Bhagavatam with his lotus lips as the Shuka, as the parrot. He has added nectar. You know, the idea you probably all heard, the idea is that the parrot, when the parrot bites a fruit, somehow or other, who knows how it happens, but somehow or other, the fruit becomes sweeter through having been bitten by the parrot. So Srimad Bhagavatam in and of itself is already just simply nectar, but now having been spoken, or you could say tasted by the mouth, by the lips of Shukadev Goswami, it's become even more nectarian. And now the essence of that nectar, Parikshit is giving to his mother, Uttara. Yes, right. So that's Brihad Bhagavatamrita. However, just like, you know, I assume you're all well aware that Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Shukadev to Maharaj Parikshit, but the way that it's presented is that Suta Goswami, who was there when Shukadev spoke to Parikshit, Suta Goswami then came and spoke to the sages in Nainasharanya, and therefore our Srimad Bhagavatam is Suta Goswami reciting the conversation of Shukadev and Parikshit. So here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the same principle applies. In that, Jaimini, a great rishi, had been present there when Parikshit spoke Brihad Bhagavatamrita to his mother Uttara. Jaimini had been there. And so now Jaimini, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is Jaimini reciting the conversation of Parikshit with Uttara to the son of Parikshit named Janmajaya. Janmajaya is the son of Parikshit, who then became the king after his departure, after Parikshit's departure. So, you know, the circumstances under which Jaimini spoke to Janmajaya, the circumstances are that Jaimini had spoken Mahabharat to Janmajaya. And at the end, Janmajaya asked him, is there more? Can you tell me more? This is real nectar. I'd really like to hear more. Can you sort of explore the subject matter deeply? Mahabharat. And then Jaimini said, okay, let me now speak Brihad Bhagavatamrita to you. Now, I hope that's not too confusing, all these different persons. We will talk a little bit more about it as we go on. All right. So, devotees. Now, we're going to discuss the structure. What is discussed and how, like the sequence particularly, of how it's discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Right. So first point is, now this is very much an overview, what I'm going to say now. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is divided into two parts. The first part is called Purava. Purava basically means preliminary. Just like, well, you might not be familiar with it so much, but with the gopis, before they actually met Krishna, they had heard about him. They'd heard about him. And hearing about him, because those topics are just so amazing, so attractive and overwhelming, actually. So the gopis, before they actually met Krishna, they heard about him. And this awoke what's called Purava Raga. Raga means attraction or attachment. And Purava, we just said, means preliminary. So just from hearing about Krishna, they developed Purava Raga, or a preliminary attachment or attraction to him, even though they haven't met him or seen him. That's Purava Raga. So the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is called Purava, or preliminary, and the second is called Uttara. And Uttara basically just means final. The final part. So these are two parts, and they're quite distinct from each other. The first part, the Purava part, is the story of Narada Muni trying to figure out who has received the greatest mercy from Lord Krishna. Is it this person or that person or another person? And Narada Muni, in the course of trying to understand who got the most mercy, who got the most nectar, mercy really is the particular idea, particular term. So in the course of trying to figure that out, Narada Muni is told by, well, you know, how to put it? It's slightly complicated. So he is instructed to go and visit someone because that person has the most mercy. But he is instructed to go and visit that person by the person who previously he had been told had got the most mercy. But then he discusses with that the first person who he was told has got the most mercy. He goes and tells him, oh, you've got so much mercy in this way, in that way, in various ways. But then that person tells him, no, 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 no. You don't understand. I haven't got mercy. I'm just, you know, my position is nothing special at all. Well, these are devotees, so they're very, very humble. And each one, when Narada comes and tells them that you've got the most mercy, each one denies it. No, I haven't. I got no mercy. And then they say, you want to meet someone who really got the mercy? Go to some other person. And Narada goes to that person and tells that person, you got the mercy. You got the most mercy in this way and that and in different ways. It's you. You are the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. But then that devotee, of course, who is very humble, says, no, 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 no. Yeah, this is how the first part goes. One after another. You got the most mercy. No, I haven't. You want to meet the person who's got the most mercy? Go to such and such. And off goes Narada. And then it repeats like that. So that's the first part. And in the course of going from person to person and being directed by each person to the next one who's on a higher level, in the course of that, Narada Muni, he goes to, well, there are seven chapters which, you know, basically means, it's not entirely like that always, but it basically means he goes to seven, there are seven levels, there are more than seven, but each chapter is dealing with a particular level, and one after the other, the levels become higher, chapter after chapter. Although in some chapters, there's, more than just one person on one level, there may be a couple or so. And in this way, Narada Muni, he begins on the earthly level on this planet Earth. And he meets a couple of people, and what I mentioned happened. First of all, he meets a Grihastha, a wealthy Grihastha devotee, who comes with his entourage and performs an offering, a boga offering, then arati, to his Shila, his Shalagram Shila. And Narada Muni's watching this, thinking, look at this. See how this person got the mercy. And he goes up to him after the puja and says, you've got the greatest mercy. You are the recipient of the Lord's greatest mercy. And that wealthy householder says, no, 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 no. And he points out how, from his perspective, in his humility, he feels there are different things wrong with him and wrong with his situation. And so then he says, if you want to meet someone who really got the mercy, there is a king in South India. And he really got the mercy because, and he explains different reasons why he feels that king in South India got much more mercy than him. Maybe like the most mercy that anyone got. Anyone on any level. And Narada goes there to the king and sees, wow, look at the mercy he got. And he tells the king, oh, you got the mercy in this way and that. And the king says, what does he say? No, 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 no. And he explains that he didn't get the mercy. And he directs Narada to someone else. So we start on planet Earth. Then we go to the heavenly planets, the higher planets. And there's a couple of levels, few levels there. Lord Indra, Lord Brahma. And yeah. And then beyond, in the third chapter, so first chapter is earthly, second chapter is heavenly, third chapter is going beyond the material world. Then fourth chapter is devotee in the spiritual realm. Then fifth chapter, higher in the spiritual realm. Sixth chapter, even higher. And seventh chapter is those who have received the complete mercy, actually. The residents of Goloka. Yeah. So in this way, Narada Muni sees that actually these residents of Goloka, they have got more mercy than anyone else. And that's it. That's it. They have actually got the most mercy. So that's just a very brief outline of the first part. Let me give you a very brief outline of the second part. The second part is the story of Gopakumar. You know, many of you, even if you haven't read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but I think many of you have heard of Gopakumar, because the word is out that Gopakumar is such a special person. So the first part, we just said, Narada's looking for the recipient of the greatest mercy of the Lord. Second part, it's related, but it's different. What he wants is not actually even what he wants, but what he does. He's a cowherd boy from Govardhan Hill, and he wants to go back to Godhead, and he does. He goes back to Godhead, step by step. He goes back to Godhead, back to Goloka Vrindavan, and meets Krishna and becomes part of Krishna's entourage in Goloka Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. But he begins. So, part of the second part is, what is the highest place? Then, what is the highest level of devotional service? The most glorious level of devotional service and the most glorious place. So just like Narada goes from place to place, going higher and higher in his quest, so Gopakumar also goes from place to place in his quest for the highest place. He's looking for the highest place. And other places which, by our standards, are high, he, after a while, he feels, no, this place is not the highest. I don't want to stay here. Even when he goes to Vaikuntha, first of all, he thinks, wow, this is really high. I think I've reached the highest place. But after a while he realizes, I'm not happy, I'm not satisfied here fully. There must be something higher. So like this, he goes through different stages. The way it's described, it's more different, like types of activity going higher. So he begins with renunciation. Then comes knowledge, second chapter. Then third chapter, devotional service begins. Fourth chapter, Vaikuntha, devotional service in Vaikuntha. Then the fifth chapter, devotional service even on a level higher than Vaikuntha. Then the sixth chapter, actually, there are seven chapters, both the first and second part, each one has seven chapters. But in the sixth chapter, in the second part, he reaches the ultimate abode. He arrives in Goloka Vrindavan. He meets Krishna. And he goes through many of the pastimes of Krishna, which are there in Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's fully satisfied, completely satisfied. So that it all comes to the climax then, in that sense, in the sixth chapter, not the last, the seventh chapter, which was the case in the first part. The seventh chapter, well, it's mainly explanation, a lot of explanation of how these things work. So there you have it, devotees. There you have it. That's an introduction to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, explaining the background and about how Sarang Goswami read it and what it is, how it came about and how it's structured, what's discussed. So tomorrow we will go on. We'll stop here, but tomorrow we'll go on to the first chapter, and first of all we will go through the Mangala Charana. There is a Mangala Charana of Brihad Bhagavatamrita also, setting the scene, glorifying, pointing out what the book's about, glorifying different people and the process like this. So we'll go on to all of that tomorrow, same time, same place. So we will see you tomorrow evening. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.